It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety, the podcast from Lighthouse Hockey. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this very cold evening via Skype is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, we were in a pretty good mood last week. Are you ready to get back to some straightforward schedule anxiety?
I actually miss the Islanders, so I don't know how it's going to be tonight. I miss them so much. I just was on Brendan Witt's Twitter for like 20 minutes before this. In a rabbit hole.
It's very weird how they just sort of like turned it off, and they'll turn it back on again in a couple of days. And joining us tonight to speak about when they come back from their long break is our friend Arthur Staple of The Athletic. Art, thanks for coming on with us.
It's good to be here. I was not on the rabbit hole of Brennan Witt's Twitter recently, but I applaud Mike for spending some quality time doing that, because Brennan's a great guy.
I was gonna say, yeah, he is gonna be on,
I miss him a lot.
If you're gonna spend time on some one person's Twitter account, that's probably the right one, right? I mean,
definitely.
So I would ask you how relaxing your All-Star break was, but I know that with a newborn in the house, words like break and relaxing are kind of relative terms. So I guess I'll just ask how's everybody doing over at Clan Staple these days?
Everybody's great. Not sleeping a ton, and but that's fine. I'm interested to see how it's going to go when I have to go cover a game. I did cover a few between the time the baby arrived and the All-Star break came up, but now I feel like she's hitting a new phase of, you know, the lungs are more powerful. So yeah, maybe my next appearance will be. Will be after I've retired from The Athletic, because my wife has threatened me with bodily harm for covering any more hockey games. But we'll see.
Yeah, well, you got to. It's a real balancing act. I know, I've been there, and you guys are working out. But I'm glad to hear everybody's doing well. But we're going to talk about your other family, your professional family, at least for a little while. So before the break, I'm kind of curious about what you kind of thought the players' feeling was about this. I know we're going to use the word first half, but it's really more of like, you know, 50 games or so. like kind of where they thought they were at the All-Star break. And, you know, they're feeling one thing I like about it is that they kept talking about how the job isn't done and there's a lot more to do. Is that the feeling you got from them, or did you kind of feel that they were like, yeah, we're pretty good. Maybe this is going to be a great season for us.
No. And I think, you know, it's not just the message from Lou Lamoriello and the message from Barry Trotz, who are guys who have certainly been around the block plenty. And that's, you know, that's a different feeling. I mean, you know, it's not a knock against Gar Snow or Doug Wade or Jack Capuano, but those are guys just with whatever their pro experience was as players and as coaches at the minor league level. It was different at the NHL level for them, as, you know, Garth obviously being a one team general manager and both those other coaches only having coached for the Islanders. So I think when you've got guys that have been around the block a little bit and been, you know, either been to Stanley Cups or been close or been on bad, you know, coach bad teams or, you know, run bad teams, I think the perspective sinks in a little bit more, especially with the many guys in the Islanders who have never played anywhere other than the Islands. So I think just having that broader perspective grounded them pretty well from the start. And when they started to play well, I think it's just, you know, it is a cliche, but it's always nice to be reminded that these guys are among the best in the world. And even when they've failed the last couple of years and had plenty of invective hurled their way, and sometimes justifiably so, they're still pretty good players. And I think being on a good team, I remember in 2014-15, which was really kind of the Islanders' breakout years, everybody remembers, sitting with Kyle Opozo, and his mantra that year was, "We're a good team." And he would kind of start a lot of sentences with, "We're a good team, so we should do this," or "We're doing this." And I sat down with him and I said, "How do you know? You haven't been on a really good team in a while." And he's like, "But we've all, whether we were kids or college or junior, like we've been good players on good teams, and it never really goes away. You just lose your way a little bit, or the, you know, things just aren't working right." He's like, "But when you're on a good team, you know it." And I think the confidence comes right back, and they don't seem cocky. I mean, I think there's a couple of guys in their team who are pretty self-confident at all times. But I think as a group, there's definitely an air of, we're never out of a game. If we're up a couple goals, we're not going to stop working because we've been drilled to keep working. And that's the only way it's going to work. And it's again, another cliche. I think that was a big Jack Capuano one about, you need all 20 guys. Well, Barry Trotz has said it a lot, too, and the guys in this team have said it a lot, too, but it seems to resonate a little bit more because this is not a terribly talented team compared to some others, and they've really embraced that that team-first mentality, and you see it in the balanced scoring, in guys stepping up each night that are maybe a little bit different, and it's been pretty wild, and I think they're all pretty happy with where they are.
Yeah,
we're happy too.
Yeah, I think everybody. At least.
I feel like Islander fans and Islander, and this is for the majority of Islander fans, not the vocal minority, but we're taking it all in stride. I think that it reflects what the players and the team are doing. There's this like stoic confidence, I guess, is the best way to put it, on both sides of the glass, like the players, the coach, coaching staff, Lamoriello, as well as the fans, all have this like weird vibe about them, and obviously winning has a lot to do with it. But I've never seen a successful Islander season where that was the kind of general attitude among the fan base as well.
I was gonna say that's a rare commodity for this franchise.
I mean, I think it, all the abuse you guys have taken over a quarter century from Nassau County politicians on down to bad owners and criminal owners and all the other garbage that we've gone over time and time again. I think last summer was such a whirlwind of the high of Lou coming in, even higher of Trotz coming in right off of the cup, and then sinking way back down with Tavares leaving, that it's a little bit like a wounded animal. Like you're not going to come barreling out of the cage to your new master and be like, "All right, everything's great. I've forgotten all about what's happened the last few years." I think it's tough. There's a lot of painful memories. And as Mike said, there's definitely the vocal minority that are either super confident at all times or completely miserable and don't care what anything good is happening and are going to search through Twitter rabbit holes to find the last Leafs writer who has denigrated the Islanders franchise. But I think it, I think it's going to take a little time. And I think even, you know, the sit down I had with Lou a couple weeks ago, where even he, in his venerable wisdom of all his years in the league, expressed some genuine surprise that the team is where they are. And I think that surprise is kind of like a nice new feeling for everybody. Those guys, Lou and Barry, were prepared to kind of use this year to evaluate and feel out what they've got. I think the fans were excited but tempered because they knew without Tavares it was not going to be necessarily a very good season. There were a lot of question marks to start. So I think everybody's still in wait and see mode, which is probably good because you still do have to wait and see, especially with this month coming up that you guys are going to talk about after I'm gone, that this is a difficult month still and things could change pretty drastically.
Yeah, I feel like Trotz in general kind of gets it. And really, there's no other way to put it, but like, I think he understands not just what you're talking about, where like, you know, the team is kind of, you know, they've been through the ringer. They're kind of surprised to be there, but they're also pretty good. And I think he also kind of gets like what the Islanders, in a very short time, it seems like he's really tapped into what the Islanders mean to the fan base, to the community, and like what an Islanders team should kind of look like. And it just, I mean, maybe it's just that I'm like a total Stan, as the kids would say now, for Barry Trotz, but like, you know, I feel like he really does get it, and the players have responded to him because he gets it. And I feel like wherever this guy goes, players are going to respond to him. Like, we just saw him walk into that junior team locker room over the weekend and just like deliver a speech, and these kids were just completely like awestruck, and then he just left, and you know, it's like, oh my god, Barry Trotz was just here. Like, would that be accurate to say that he kind of gets it, or am I just like making that up?
This is a guy who went into an opposing team's locker room, albeit the one that he just recently coached, and gave them a pep talk before they played his own team this year in Brooklyn. I've never seen anything like that at any level. It's insane. And everyone on the Caps was kind of like, oh, yeah, that's him. Mm. And everyone on the Islanders was like, yeah, well, you know, he led them to the Stanley Cup. That's cool. And even the fans.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if any other Islander coach did that? Oh, their heads would be exploding. Right. And rightfully so. It's definitely weird. But he is a guy who is incredibly comfortable in his own skin. I mean, he plays the lineup goalie game, but when you talk to him about strategy, he says, we're going to do what we're going to do. And, you know, it's up to somebody else to try to stop us. There's no magic formula. And I think that is, you know, from a reporter standpoint, it's incredibly refreshing to have those kinds of conversations with a guy who feels he can be relatively open and talk about what he thinks about players or system or the team as a whole or certain emotional situations, of which there's already been quite a few. And like you said, I think he gets, you know, he maybe projects that he doesn't, but he did his homework on what it means to be an Islander fan and what it means to be part of this franchise. And, you know, I don't think anybody's really written about it very much, but the fact that he passed Al Arbor on the coaching wins list while coaching the Islanders, I think it meant something to him. And you know, he's definitely been around long enough where he knows almost everybody that's coached or played in the last 30 years. And you'd be hard pressed to find anybody to say a bad word about the guy. And it's really genuine. I think there's not a lot of phoniness to this guy. And I think that's what's resonated the most with his players. And I think with the fans as well.
Yeah.
This might be like, little cliche or whatever, but I do feel like also, and this has a lot to do with Trotz and Lamoriello, but the way that other teams now, when they play the Islanders, are, first of all, they're better. So that's causing this, but they're paying attention more to like smaller details in the game, and they're taking the Islanders a little more seriously, knowing that it's not just going to be, you know, a 7-4 game either way. And, you know, if we don't make mistakes, we're going to beat this team because we're better and better coached. I don't know if that's something you see. I noticed it's something that I think really struck me during the All-Star game as well, just the way that people were talking about Matt Barzal. I was like, they're talking, I've never heard other players really talk about Islanders in the way that they were glowing about Barzal. When people talk about Tavares during his heyday, it was, you know, that he works hard and he's smart and he's obsessed with hockey. Whereas Barzal, they were like, basically, like, this guy is mesmerizing and he controls the game. And I feel like that you're seeing that in in the way other teams are now coming into the Coliseum or Barclays Center or wherever the Islanders are playing that night. And it's like you can actually see, I almost see it, that these teams are, it takes like them 4 or 5 minutes just to figure the Islanders out, like in the game. And by that time, the Islanders could be up 1-0 or already have the ice tilted.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, even if you don't, I mean, if you're whatever Tampa did, you know, when they came into Barclays and were down 3-0, I mean, those, you know, a couple of goals were pretty lucky, but it's still, you know, I think there's a respect of a Trotz coach team. I mean, I think, you know, I talked a little bit with John Cooper before that game and kind of asked him, have you ever seen a team go from, you know, do such a legitimate 180 degree turn from being a team that barely played any defense and had no structure to a team that's all structure? And he said, you know, it's a hallmark of what Barry does. And, you know, he's obviously been the guy who's had some pretty great teams, but it's a testament to coaching. And I think over a lot of years, maybe the Islanders try to convince people that coaching wasn't the most important thing. Not that Jack is a bad coach or that Doug may not, you know, may end up being a good coach in his next stop. But I think there's a difference between trying to convince people with what you say and then just showing it. And I think right from, you know, maybe game 8 or 9, when they went on their little 5-game winning streak to kind of turn around the hiccups of the first few weeks, that was when they started to get it. I think those 2 Pittsburgh games, Barry has said that a couple times, the one where they kind of ran Pittsburgh off the ice with some quality shooting percentage and then beat them again, you know, back home in a shootout, that I think the players started to believe then too. And that spills over. You just, you know, you see a confident team across the ice, and I think you have to take them a little bit more seriously instead of just waiting for them to make a mistake and you can capitalize pretty easily, which has kind of been the way the Islanders have been 6 or 7 out of the last 8 or 9 years. And I just think it's again, I go back to that Kyle quote, like it's hard to quantify, but I think when you know, you know. And I think the players know, and that means every one of their opponents has to either knows going in or has to figure it out pretty quick.
I think having good goaltending also kind of goes a long way to thinking that you're a pretty good team, and that, you know, not that Yarrow and Greiss was bad last year, but, like, you know, they had their moments, but let's face it, like, none of those guys really instilled the same kind of confidence that Robin Leonard has so far this season, at least. You know, maybe Greiss has this year too. But so you wrote an article, a piece for The Athletic this week that I'm sure everybody has already read, but even if you have read it, you should read it again, and you should rate it, obviously, on the bottom if you have not already. But it was a very concise and comprehensive piece about trade targets that the Islanders could potentially target, but with the trade deadline coming up at the end of February. Before we get to those possibilities, I want to ask what the latest on Andrew Ladd is. We know he's been skating. He could potentially come back maybe towards the end of the month. Is that right? Because I don't know. I kind of feel like this is going to be one of those situations where he kind of ends up being the big deadline acquisition and everybody's going to be kind of disappointed by it. But he is kind of – I never thought we'd see him in an Islanders uniform again. And then the next day it's like, oh, he's skating. And I was like, what? Who? Oh, my God. I thought he would have been, you know, sort of ostracized to lose Island by now, but I guess not.
No, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's a knee injury. I haven't really seen him around too much, but it was obviously a serious one, whatever, you know, he's missed 35 games or so. And yeah, I mean, he's been skating. You never know. They've been gone for 10 days. Who knows what's happened since then? He's certainly not going anywhere in a trade. So, if he's trying to get back this year, then he'll be back. And I think, now that we're in year 3 of this deal, which we can all acknowledge is not a good deal, and will continue to not be a good deal because he's on the wrong side of 30 and now is coming off a major injury that's unrelated to the back problems, right, that have plagued him the whole time and all the other things. But I think he's still on this team. He can still be a contributor. And yes, it will be disappointing if that's the, you know, the, you get the, we're talking a lot of cliches tonight, but if that's the, like, that's as good as it, trading for someone is to get a guy like that back. No, it's not, because it's not as much fun, but yeah, I think, you know, I think the rotating cast of wings on that third line, it's been nice to see Michael Dalcol gain some confidence and have a little bit of an impact. It was nicer to see Josh Hosang have a little bit of an impact before he got sent down. And even Anthony Beauvillier has played there and looked pretty good. So, you know, but I think Ladd is the guy that fits pretty well there. And I think for all of his lack of production over the 2+ years he's been here, he's a pretty steady player. He's like an older, less productive Josh Bailey. Like, he's a guy who he knows where to be on the ice. He doesn't shy away from a lot of the physical stuff. He can occasionally kick in a goal or two. And I think he's of the three guys in that line with Valfilippula and Leo Komarov, he's the most skilled guy of those three.
They played okay early in the season. Like, he looked
he played okay with Tanner Fritz last year too. I just think he's never going to be a 50-point guy again. And I think he's got to understand that and not be disappointed that he's not playing on any power play units. And I think everybody else has to understand that, like, yes, you're going to look at the contract. The contract is terrible. You got to accept it. I mean, it's, you know, you don't rank the you don't play on the first line because you make the most money. You play where you play. And if he can fit in as a 12 or 13 minute a night guy and score a couple of goals occasionally and hit some people and give somebody a face wash and play sound defensively, he's going to play. So I think that would be a helpful guy to have back in lieu of that. And maybe Lou does, you know, and not in lieu like Lou Lamoriello, but in place of that, I imagine that Lou is not the kind of person to say, we're going to get this guy back. And that's like adding somebody. He likes to add people. I don't know if he's going to add any big names and shoot for the moon, but he's going to add something because I think even the most optimistic GM would look at this team and see that they're playing with house money right now, being in first place and you know, headed towards a playoff spot and maybe even winning a round or two. You don't say, well, we'll roll the dice with the same group. They've been extremely lucky as far as health goes. They've been extremely lucky as far as shooting goes. Guys are shooting 25-20% in that bottom six. So I think you have to add people that know how to put the puck in the net. You have to add people that, you know, can fit into what Trotz is selling. And like I said, I don't know if that's going to be Matt Duchene or Artemi Panarin. Probably not, because they don't have a ton of assets to give up for those guys. But I think there are lots of people that are available even now, 3 weeks ahead of the trade deadline, who can help them.
The market, I think, is in it's like buyer's market, I guess, maybe for the first, or I won't even say it's heavily slanted towards buyers, but for the first time in years, I feel like it, because there's been a little bit of separation earlier in the standings than there usually is, especially in the East. There are definitely a couple people on that list, in that article that you mentioned or that you wrote that I had been thinking of for a couple of weeks. And I think the two most intriguing names to me are Nyquist and Silverberg, because I think what they both are is they both score and they also bring something that the Islanders really don't like. Nyquist especially, I think, they both have a peculiar set of skills, and the Islanders don't have that. It'd be like acquiring Michael Grabner. You're getting a player who's very, you know, he's very good at something that you don't have, that basically three players in the league have. And I think those two guys are crafty and can create with either speed or vision that the Islanders they just frankly don't have. And you know, Andrew Ladd obviously doesn't have either. So it's I think those are like those are the kind of, like, last year we saw it didn't really work out for the Knights, but when they went and they Thomas Tatar or something? Right. Yeah, Thomas Tatar, like that kind of player who sure, he's a wild card. He might not, you know, work out, but he gives you just like a little bit of like extra funk to your lineup. And I think that's maybe what the Islanders would need and would kind of go a long way and is relatively cheap, because you're not acquiring someone who is a 5-tool player.
Well, one thing I like that Art mentioned was that Detroit is in a desperate need to get rid of salary. They're right up against the salary cap, and they would probably take literally anything that Lou Lamoriello offered them just to get somebody off of their books, because they have replaced the Flyers as that sort of definitive cap hell team right now, and getting rid of somebody like Nyquist, who's making a good amount of money, would actually help them out a lot. You know, you'd almost be doing them more of a favor than they'd be doing you by giving you the guy.
Yeah, and I, like Mike said, Nyquist definitely gives them something. You know, if you were a right shooting guy, he does play right wing, but he's a lefty. If he was a right-handed shot, I think it would be perfect. And I think if his skill set were on Silverberg's body and Silverberg's right-handed shooting, that would absolutely be the guy that you target. I think Silverberg's not quite as effective as Nyquist is, and I think the other appealing thing about both those guys is they played on veteran teams, so I think they know how to handle themselves in a veteran room. They're not wild cards or anything like that in terms of personality, and they played on teams that can play kind of a slow, heavy game that the Islanders play. You know, Detroit certainly. He's a guy who probably knows Val Filppula well from the little bit of overlap they had in Detroit, and I think Detroit, when Nyquist was on good Detroit teams, which I don't think was that long a stretch of time, but was certainly had for a little while, they had some super flashy guys, but they played, a very Western Conference style of game and with their big defensemen. And I think Anaheim certainly being in the Western Conference and being a much older team, very similar. So I don't think those guys would have a lot of trouble adjusting to the way the Islanders play. Having said that, I wonder, we saw the Jake Muzzin trade to Toronto, which was a pretty decent cost. I think it's been debated ad nauseum online about how much the Leafs really gave up. But I've certainly debated with some people in the comment section of that article that I wrote about what the equivalent cost would be for the Islanders. And it's just different. The Islanders don't have as deep a prospect pool as the Leafs do. So the Leafs can give up their two of their five best prospects, but not their one or two. And it seems like it's okay because they have guys that are coming up through their system because they've been terrible for so long. The Islanders don't have that. Their high-end guys are already in the NHL. Their high-end guys on the prospect list are a longer way away. And I don't think their middling guys, the ones that are in Bridgeport now, are quite as appealing to other teams when you have a first-round pick and then have to throw in a couple prospects. So I think that kind of points the way to acquiring rentals as well. And I'm curious to see when the first rental domino falls, what the cost is going to be, whether it's going to be like what the Rangers got for Michael Grabner last year, a second and a, B minus level prospect, or whether it's going to be what every national reporter seems to be talking about with guys like Michael Ferland or Kevin Hayes, where they're like, even as it's a rental, we're getting a first round pick and we're getting a prospect, which is what teams one out there now, but then as we get closer to the deadline, realize they're not getting it and have to settle for something less. So, I don't know how Lou feels about his team, whether he feels like he needs to strike first or whether he wants to wait and see what the market is going to look like. I think we all know what Garth Snow would have done and has done, which is be a little too patient at this time of year. But I think, we'll have to see Lou, when you know that he's done something, when it's done and it's announced. You'd never really know much before, so I'm curious to see which way it's going to go.
Yeah, I thought that was fun, too, because I hadn't really thought about it until you put it in the article that, yeah, they don't have those sort of mid-range prospects to trade. And then the other problem is they have a first-round pick. They don't have a third or a fourth, and they might not have a second, depending on which pick Calgary gives them to complete the Travis Hamonic deal, whether it's this year's second round pick or 2020 second round pick. So yeah, like that's what I'm kind of worried about. And I don't think that, it wasn't the article that you wrote was totally fine. I'm not sure that they're going to have what they can do, given that they don't really have that much to give up for these sort of mid range rentals. But then it makes me wonder, like, I wonder if Lou might have some kind of bigger splash in mind. Like, okay, so instead of getting this rental guy who's going to be UFA in 2 months, what if they went for somebody with term? Is that something that you think that they would be interested in? And then like that would move like a bigger piece or a bigger prospect for that? Or do you kind of see them leaning more towards the rental market and, trying to see what they can get for what they have?
I think anything's possible. I hate to give such a vague answer, but I look at their first, I assume that Lou, the one thing that he has carried over from his days in Toronto and his longer days in Jersey is that he's hardly ever been a guy who's picked very high in the draft, and it doesn't look like the Islanders are going to pick very high in the draft this year. So I think he sees, you know, a guy who's playing in the NHL right now who maybe either has a year or two left on his deal or is the sort of rental that can put them over the top, as that's way more valuable to me than a guy we pick 22nd or 23rd who may not pan out. You can't do that too often, and I think that was the pitfall that he fell into in Jersey.
Yeah,
that
sure.
If you keep doing that over and over again, then you've got nothing when things finally hit the fan. Mm. But I think in this case, especially coming off the four picks in the first 45 from last draft, when he couldn't find any good deals with those picks at the draft in June, I imagine that being the guy that he is, he immediately fast forwarded to, if we play well this year, or if we're close, or if we're this, and I have a deal for a guy who can help us this year and down the road, and I have to give up my first round pick. Well, I just had two way better first round picks that we had last year in arguably a better draft.
Right.
You know, this year's draft, I think, projects to be pretty good. Obviously, you know, at the very, very top, it's probably a little bit better with Jack Hughes and Kaapo Kakko, which is one of my favorite all-time names. But I think further down, it dries up a little bit. And if you're going to, you know, say we got to rebuild the prospect pool, that's legitimate because it's not very deep. But I think also if you can get through without trading any of those four guys that you picked early in the draft last year, then that counts as essentially having two full drafts at the top. So I think that makes this one a little bit more expendable. And I wouldn't imagine that he'd want to give it up for anyone who's an expiring contract. But I think, you know, if you look at Tyler Toffoli, who was a guy I mentioned from out in LA, and they certainly seem like they're ready to burn it down to the ground out there. You know, if you think even bigger, it would certainly take a lot more than a first-round pick and a couple of prospects to get Vladimir Tarasenko if the Blues are so inclined, which I'm not convinced of. Mm. But if that were the guy, you'd say, yeah, I'm giving you my first-round pick, and I'll give you some other stuff,
right,
too. So, yeah, I think there's guys available there, and I think in the next week or two, if you're looking to make that kind of deal, there may be, you know, the logjam that's around the playoff cut line in the West will probably start to separate itself a little bit, and maybe you'll get teams that think that they're not sellers who will realize that they should be.
Yeah.
I think another interesting part of this deadline is that there are a couple good fits for the Islanders on teams that basically they wouldn't be caught dead trading with, and you'd be pissed if it was the other way around and they traded with like the Rangers, the Blue Jackets, mm-hmm. the Hurricanes. These are all teams in their division. All aside from the Rangers, the other two, I mean, the Hurricanes, maybe not so much, but they're still quote unquote in the mix for a playoff spot. So I'm really interested to see if there's some weird shenanigans going on. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily say it'll be to the extent of what the Sharks and the Senators and the Panthers, you know, what happened with the Mike Hoffman thing. But you know, like I think about Kevin Hayes, for example, I think he would be a really good fit for the Islanders. Unfortunately, I don't think the Rangers would be caught dead trading him to the Islanders.
Yeah.
And almost Ferland too. Like, I don't think that the Hurricanes would be thrilled to trade him to a team in their division at the deadline when they're only, you know, 6 points out. So it's just like a very strange trading market this year. And maybe it's just because the Islanders haven't really been buyers in a while that I feel this way. But it's like and Lou definitely doesn't help the fact that he, you know, nobody knows except for incarcerated Bob what he's going to do. But I just have no clue, and I don't think anyone really does, you know, what's going to happen with the Islanders. And I think they hold a lot more chips than they're used to, and that the league as a whole was ready for them too, because they're kind of a bit of a wild card, just the fact that they're in this party.
Yeah, and I think as far as the Rangers are concerned, I think the Rangers showed last year that they're going to get the return that they want to get, and they don't care who they go to. And I think you know, that's the way the Rangers operate. I think they do things with a little bit of hubris, which is not the way that a lot of other teams would operate. I think of the Islanders, and certainly they have been in that scenario often over the last couple of years, you know, last couple of decades, where they've been sellers and determined sellers, and probably didn't pursue trades with the Rangers, who were better than them because of the optics. I don't think the Rangers care about that. So, you know, Hayes, I think, is going to end up being a little too rich for them, and probably they'll get better offers out west for him. But a guy like Matt Zuccarello, you know, if the cost is a mid-round pick and a middling prospect, because Zuccarello's got some injury issues, who knows, you know, how badly he wants to go to, you know, way out west, Winnipeg, wherever. He's a guy who doesn't, who I think...
That would crack me up.
Well, yeah, he's not a popular guy for sure. Yeah. I think that's an interesting part of it. But I think Lou, with, you know, I think that's where Lou having no history with the Islanders and Barry having no history with the Islanders helps them, because they can make these decisions. You know, they don't, nobody takes the fans into account. Sorry to say, everybody. But I think there's not enough, they haven't been around these fans long enough or around the people on the island long enough to say like, oh yeah, maybe we shouldn't do that. I think they're looking to make their team as good as they can make it. And if Matt Zuccarello is the guy, or even like as a depth guy, I mentioned if Adam McQuaid, who's, you know, a fantastic guy and would be a very good 7-8 guy to have as insurance for a playoff run on D, if that's the guy you end up getting, who cares where he came from? It's a good guy to have. So I would hope, and I assume that Lou does not care about that. And I certainly believe the Rangers don't care about that. So maybe this is the year finally that we see an Islander Ranger deadline deal that helps both teams. And it, probably the way the Islander fans want it, which is helps the Islanders get to the playoffs and get deep in the playoffs.
I think the problem has always been, I mean, for me, it's always been like, all right, yeah, you make a trade with the Rangers and then you trade them a first round pick, and then that first round pick becomes some kind of superstar that's going to just kill you for a while. But then again, both Anthony Beauvillier and Josh Hosang were from Rangers draft picks, so you never know. It could work out either way. just a couple more. I'm just curious, because Mike and I do a lot of tweaking of, or maybe more so, depending on your feelings, of your athletic colleagues and a lot of your friends and coworkers in the media. I'm just kind of curious as to the sense you get from them about what the Islanders are. Like, do they think this is kind of like a fluke and this is going to all fall apart? I'm sure they're sick of Islanders fans yelling at them in the comments of everything they write and on Twitter and all that stuff. But, like, I'm just kind of curious as to, like, what they might think and whether they think this team is just going to go away, or this is, like, a real thing that they should be paying attention to.
I think the game in Toronto opened a lot of people's eyes as far as national media and my colleagues up to the north, of which there are many. I think that was the game where people were, you know, I was holed up with a 1 week old at the time, so I wasn't paying closest attention, but I did watch the game, and I had seen a lot of all the other games up to that point. So that game didn't completely take me by surprise. I was surprised at how completely they dominated it and how quickly Tavares's teammates laid down in that game, which I would be very upset about if I were him, by the way. Even talking to the guys when I got back, talking to Josh Hosang in particular, who's a Toronto native, who just said like that for me is like that my buddies were telling me like that was the game where I was like, oh yeah, like these guys are legit. Like they made a team that like has been steamrolling everybody just slink away. Like the Leafs didn't, like, you know, we've all seen plenty of games where the Islanders have been up 3 or 4 goals midway through and been like, yeah, this one ain't over. But I think that night, not only did the Leafs players believe it, but everybody in that building and everybody watching said like, this game is over after Brazo completed the hat trick and it was 4-0. Like the Leafs got nothing that night and they generated nothing and they gave up because they, it was too hard. And I think that for a lot of the national media, of which many Islanders fans online seek approval, I think that was the turning point for them. So I think people are convinced, maybe is the wrong word, because like you said, we still got what 33 right. games left, but certainly eyes opened and impressed. And I think, you know, the easy way to think of it is, well, they brought in this general manager who's got an incredible pedigree, and they brought in this coach who's got this incredible pedigree. But these were all the same people who went after they brought in that general manager, that coach, were perfectly willing to say like, yeah, why would John Tavares stay on the island? Like he was whatever, toiling away was the way that one of the Canadian writers put it on Twitter. And then the guys that Lou brought in after Tavares left, Komarov, trading for Matt Martin, Leonard, Philpola, left a lot of people scratching their heads. And I think it was sort of like a ha-ha Islanders kind of situation all over again. At least it started to be, because that's the default setting for a lot of national media, especially in Canada, who don't pay the closest attention. So I think that maybe even with the good record coming into that game, that was the one that flipped the switch for a lot of people. And I think, you know, the game at the end of the month at the Coliseum when Tavares comes in is going to be, there's going to be a lot of attention paid to that. And my hope is that both teams are still kind of where they are right now, and we'll be past the trade deadline, and maybe they'll be incorporating some new guys in, because it's going to be a gong show. And I think a lot of people, a lot of hockey media will point to whatever craziness the Islanders fans bring to that game that night and say, look at these, you know, rubes, they don't deserve to have a good team, whatever they're going to say. It's just narrative to me. It's, you know, I think there's so much building up from last summer to go towards that night. It's going to be a little over the top, but not necessarily unearned. And I'm sure John's a big boy. He'll be able to handle it. He knows what's coming. But I think the fact that the team will be good, at the end of the month and after the trade deadline and headed towards the playoffs is hopefully the thing that people will take away the most, instead of the JT sucks chance, which I'm sure will start in the parking lot very early before that game.
I'm concerned about what's going to come flying out of the stands. That's what I'm really afraid of.
Well, speaking of Brendan Witt, you know, that game against the Sabres when they got robbed, the NHL stole a playoff game from them when Witt scored that goal, and beer bottles flew on the ice very quickly after that. But I actually think the thing that pisses Islander fans off more than maybe it is seeking approval, but Dan, this is what, you know, I think gets Dan and my goat more than anything, is that instead of going digging a little deeper, these, you know, high level national media writers up, especially in Canada, don't just pull back the onion just a little bit further and to see, oh no, that's why they're upset about this part of it. Like, I think Travis on Twitter put like a very nice broken down argument or response to something that Justin Bourne wrote, and it was just like very well thought out. I was like, yes, it's like if you would just read what some of, you know, not the people that are screaming and cursing James Myrtle out on Twitter, but the people who are like, yeah, no, this is why, like, here's like three things that are very easy to digest and understand. This is why we're upset about what happened. It has nothing to do with the fact that he, you know, this guy went home, or for, you know, there are other instances with other players or narratives or whatever. So I think that's what irks Islander fans more. And then it literally takes the Islanders to become the quote unquote best story of the season for people to pay attention. And then maybe dig into the reasons, or, you know, to pay a little bit more attention to the team. And I get that's part of the job and stuff, but I think that's more what's pissed off people. And I think also it's going to add like fuel to the fire that's coming on February, what is it, 28th or 27th, whatever the game is. And I don't think like guys like Myrtle or LeBron or people in Toronto are unaware that they're doing that. Like, I don't think that they're, you know, they're naive enough to know, oh, I'll piss these guys off a little more, because that night's going to be great. It's going to be easy story fodder, and I can easily, you know, make it a little bit better for myself. And that's why I hope to not see them that night.
Well, I will say this, you know, as someone, and you guys have experienced it too, as someone who's been cursed out on Twitter plenty of times, when you have it happen so often, and even if it's just a few voices that are the loudest and the most obnoxious, you don't really care to look past that. You just give up. And I get it, because you've got guys like James and other Toronto writers have their own crazy fans to deal with. So that part I understand, where you just don't want to be bothered, and you think that that's representative of the whole fan base, which I think we all know it's definitely not. Twitter is just the smallest, loudest segment of every of every fan base. It's just that the unfortunate part from years past is that there haven't been a lot of other Islander fans making themselves known. But I think, you know, as far as the last point goes, you know, we work on clicks and subscriptions and views and video, you know, all that stuff. It definitely feeds the excitement when you can take a little bit of a shot at another fan base that's not really connected to the team or teams that you cover. And also, it's just human nature to not pay the closest attention. You're right. I think it's, I've gone into explaining a couple of times in private messages or in public or whatever to some of my colleagues and other friends in the media about what the real deal is. And I, you know, sometimes it's hard to pay attention. It's not a huge excuse. And I understand that for me, the Islanders are the most important, the only thing that professionally that I care about. And so the fans, you know, I listen to the fans, and I think even without listening to them, I think was pretty obvious how things were going to go on July 1. And I think even John, when he had a chance to think about it after the Players Tribune thing, after the initial shock wore off, I think even he understands that his decision was going to piss some people off. And maybe the way that he went about it was going to piss some people off, even though it was an agonizing decision for him. So, it's weird to me that people want to co-opt that. And as I've said it on Twitter and I've written it, like, I don't understand why writers or other fans of other teams tell Islander fans how they should feel, or why didn't you get upset at your GM, or why didn't you get upset at your owners? And it's just like, it's not an either or situation. It's the whole thing.
We're plenty upset at them.
Right. There's a lot to go around.
There was a lot to go around, and some of it fell on Tavares, and like I said, he's a big boy and he can handle it. And I'm sure that it will be initially very vitriolic. And I hope that when they, you know, I'm not certain that there'll be a video, but I'm pretty sure there will be. I hope when they show it, that people are respectful, and then you can go back to booing the crap out of him. But but he was the most important guy to come through here in a long, long time. And the way he went out was not good at all. And it didn't help the organization at all. But I think that's really my hope, is that when the team is good enough to counteract whatever, you know, whatever pocket, and it's not even going to be pockets. I understand they're going to boo him, and maybe they'll boo him forever, and it'll be kind of an entertaining thing to you know, as I mentioned, I don't think there's
anything wrong with that. Right. Like, right. This is what it's all about. I think that's, people are kind of missing that point.
Right. It's a credit to the organ. You know, I mentioned this. I forget where I mentioned it. Somewhere in Toronto. I said, these are fans that used to boo Christian Ehrhoff because Garth traded for his rights. And he said, "Nah, I'm not going to sign." Like, they were booing a guy who stunk. Okay. Like, they were lucky that he didn't sign. But so that's a credit.
People booed Ryan
Smith. That's a,
you know?
Yeah.
And he played. He was totally fine for an Islander for 2 months. And then he was like, I'm going to leave. And people booed him for 10 years.
On the other end of the spectrum, I've been stumping to get Adam Henrique and Alec Martinez tribute videos for when they come to town every time. So like we are a fan base that I think maybe it was Colby Armstrong, but when he did something when he was on the Penguins when they were really bad. I remember going to the next game and he was on the Thrashers maybe.
Yeah.
And I remember at the next game he played the Islanders, just people were booing, and me and my buddy Brendan were like, "Why? What? Oh, it's Colby Armstrong." I had no idea he was even on the Thrashers. Yeah. So like, yeah,
nobody said, you were the only two guys in the history of the world who said, "Oh, that's Kobe Armstrong." Anyway, yeah, it's a very long-winded way of saying he's going to get booed. They're going to yell stuff. And when they play the video, I hope people cheer for a minute and acknowledge him and then go back to booing him. And I think the Toronto fans,
I'm going to respectfully not do that.
Okay. The Toronto media will move on, because by then the trade deadline will have passed. And everybody will have other stuff to focus on.
Yeah, that's actually going to be kind of like hockey Armageddon for them, because so it's the deadline. It's that Wednesday, right?
Deadline, I think, is like 3 days before.
Right. So, yeah, it's going to be a really interesting week.
Yes.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Art, I said we were going to take you up for about 20 minutes, and it's been about 45 now. So I think you have gone, as always, above and beyond, and we really appreciate you coming on with us. What can we look forward to in The Athletic this week? Obviously, the Islanders actually play a game, surprise, surprise, in a couple of days, but they return to practice tomorrow. And what can we look forward to on the horizon?
I've got a story about Casey Cizikas and his rather productive first half. He was one of those guys that I was talking about who's shooting well and playing well. That'll be coming up soon. And then I think, got to see what happens with the next couple of games, and maybe there'll be a trade or two on the horizon, and, you know, I kind of play it by ear. I think next week. I might be visiting with one of the Islanders recent draft picks who's currently playing in the amateur ranks. So gotta tune in.
Yeah.
Tune in, subscribe, check it out, and yeah, we've got lots of stuff coming.
Yes.
It's great.
And there's a promotion going on now too, right? I saw you tweet a little earlier
today. That's right. 40% off for the from now until the actual trade deadline.
Oh.
So hopefully the Islanders, Lou holds all his cards to the very end so that everybody comes in to subscribe and pays their money. And no, I'm kidding. I don't know what they're going to do, but it's worth it at any time anyone wants to sign up.
Yes.
Not just for me. Lots of other good writers. You can chirp James Myrtle in the comments of the Leafs articles if you want. Whatever you want to do.
I would say that's a good deal to get, because every single day there's another article on Artemi Panarin. So if you want to follow the trials and tribulations of his time in Columbus, an Athletic subscription is absolutely necessary. So you should do that right away. But it's great, and I mean the work there by you especially, but by a lot of your colleagues is phenomenal. So yeah, get on that right away. But thanks a lot. We really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again probably sometime after the trade deadline, after everything shakes out, and we'll see where the Islanders are at.
Awesome. Thanks right. a lot, guys.
Thanks a lot.
So long,
Take
Arthur.
All right. Well, that was absolutely awesome. Every word. I mean, I'm just saying.
It's a great time.
Yeah.
It's a great time. And you know, I do think his wishes of Islander fans, if there is a tribute video, to not mess that up, they're going to fall on deaf ears.
Yeah.
And mine especially, because I actually can't wait to mess around during that video.
I will say that there's going to be a lot of cheers for John Tavares in that game, because there are people, and again, we talk about Twitter being kind of like, you know, a very small slice of the fan base and not very representative. But, you know, there are people out there that are like, hey, man, 9 great years. You did everything you could. Thanks so much. You earned the right to leave. You did what you wanted to do. You're going home. Good for you. You know, vaya con Dios, like that kind of thing. And there will be cheers for him. I absolutely know it. There's also probably going to be sleepwear flying out of the stands. And I'm not encouraging this. I'm not trying to get anybody ideas. I'm just saying, don't be surprised if some pajamas, bed sheets, bathrobes, nightcaps, or any other kind of, you know, nocturnal paraphernalia that just came out wrong, but you know what I mean, comes flying out of the stands at Nassau Coliseum. Please don't do that. Don't. Seriously. But I can see it happening. I mean, this is the first year, and I think Philadelphia fans are kind of like, their team has just beaten them to death. Like, they just don't care anymore, which is kind of odd for Flyers fans. But normally, like, Philly's good for like one game where just crap just comes flying out of the stands. That probably hasn't happened this year. So I guess, you know, that game at Nassau Coliseum on the 28th is probably as good a time as any to take up the mantle. February 25th, by the way, is the trade deadline. That's the Monday before that game. I actually thought that trade deadline was on the 28th, so I'm glad you brought it up, because it is actually the 25th. So
yeah, that would they probably moved it there. Like, we were not going to be able to handle it.
Yeah. So, but let's talk about the month of February for the Islanders, because it's kind of a big one. They have been off for the last 10 days with the All-Star break, and then their bye. We're going to finish talking about the All-Star break, because we want to end on a positive note for sure. Today is Wednesday. You're probably listening to this on a Thursday. If you're listening to this in your commute and it's freezing and it's snowy and it's cold, good luck to you. I hope you get where you're going. But Friday, the Islanders are back in action at the Coliseum against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And then the next day, again, 7 o'clock against the LA Kings, also at home for them. So that's kind of a tough one. I mean, the Kings aren't what they were, but they're still pretty good. But, I mean, to come back after a 10-day break against the Lightning – is a really, really rough stretch, especially since the Lightning are playing actually right now. They have not had that bye week, so that could either help or hurt them. But that's just really the tip of the iceberg, man. They got a lot of hard games. They got the Bruins next Tuesday, and then the Devils, which, I mean, no offense to the New Jersey Devils, but that's probably the easiest game they have on paper all month, because they're the one team that's really kind of out of it at this point. Then that Saturday they have matinees against Colorado and Minnesota back to back. Then they're on the road to Buffalo and Columbus. And that game against the Blue Jackets is going to be a huge one. I mean, the Blue Jackets are probably going to be still in the mix for the top of the Metro. Then they play the Oilers at home. You know, again, hopefully you catch a Western Canadian team at home, but then they go on their big road trip, Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver. that final week until they come back and then play the Flames, who are again are one of the best teams in the league. So they got to play the Flames twice in the span of a week, which is less than a week actually, which is a really, really tough schedule. And then of course the 28th against the Leafs, where it's going to be a madhouse. So that's 14 really, really tough games in 28 days. And you know, they've been really good to this point in the season, but this is going to be a really, really tough road to hoe. And as good as they've been and as positive as things have been, if you're a little bit concerned, I would agree with you. And I am also as concerned.
Yeah, I think the thing to remember here is that, first of all, like you had a really good point last week where you said, I think it was like 20 and 13 or something, that gets the Islanders to above 100 points. And just having that in the back of your mind, I think, is going to help you kind of take a deep breath. And the other thing is, like, we in this is four seasons of the show, I think, in the October and November episodes of years where they aren't successful, we always talk about the fact that blowing these games in November, those 2 points would count the same as the ones that you get in February and March. And for the first time in years, the Islanders got those points in October and February and November. and so I think the Islanders are 7 points into the playoffs. Like they're 7 points ahead of the Sabres, who are the first team out. So there is, first of all, yes, there's a really daunting stretch coming their way. But the Islanders now are in the point where the part of this process of becoming a good team where if they blow it, it is a really, really horrible thing. there's no one to blame but themselves, because there's like, if you looked at this from the Islanders being on the outside and being that team chasing and saying, oh, you know, that they're 7 points ahead, it's going to be really hard to catch that team with this much time left. So the Islanders they're in such a good position that obviously is a really daunting test, but just coming out of this break relatively strong will go with such a long way in just quelling those fears that Islander fans will naturally have, because we've been through a lot worse than a team blowing a 7-point cushion and not making the playoffs. So we've seen it all, and we just don't want to see it again, you know?
Right.
So I think that's where we're coming from. But I was walking to the train yesterday thinking like how much I was thinking about Trotz and the Islanders and just like thinking about how much I miss them. And I started to like get a little bit of chills, like thinking about that. The Islanders have really big games in February coming up for the first time in a while. They're happening at Nassau Coliseum.
Yeah.
Like this is, it's, I just can't wait now. Like I'm happy they're not playing tomorrow, which was Thursday and it's Friday. So we've had this like little break. It's nice. Like to kind of like, I'm gearing myself up, like, you know, collecting my own breath. And I'm so excited to see how this thing pans out, because like, look at where we are.
You know, I hadn't really thought about it that way where, and the Islanders have done this year, so this is all just an example. But, you know, you lose a game in October to the Panthers or a game that maybe you should have won, but you didn't. And then eventually it comes back to bite you. Well, the Islanders won the majority of those games. So, you know, if you turn around this month and, you know, maybe you drop one of these or drop a couple of these, it might not end up being the end of the world. I just checked the scoreboard right now. The Penguins are up on the Lightning 4-0 at this point. So let's assume that the Penguins go on and win that game. The Islanders will still be 3 points ahead of them with a game in hand. So now we start talking about positioning and you know, staying ahead of these guys, games in hand. If they can just come out of this with a winning record still and still be in the mix for that top three in the Metro, I think that would be a huge get. And I know that's probably setting the bar kind of low. But that would, like you said, I mean, this hasn't happened in a long, long time. And I think that's key. And I think, you know, taking what Art said, the players understand this. And they understand, you know, they have guys at the helm now who have been through this kind of stuff. And they know what it's like to be in a race like this and to need these games and to not be like, well, you know, oh, this is tough, we'll get them next time. Like, no, you got to win today. I mean, Barry Trotz said in the game against Winnipeg, were you proud of your team hanging in there against one of the best teams in the league? And he was like, they're not paid to hang in, they're paid to win. And so if you take that philosophy and bring it here, they're paid to win. And that means winning games in February with the season, maybe not on the line, but, you know, now is the time when you need to solidify your position, and you can't You can't let slip that far. And this is the kind of game where, like, a Barry Trotz knows you need to win them. So, yeah, going into Buffalo and Columbus in the middle of February is going to be rough for a lot of reasons. Going out to Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver at the end of February, it's going to be tough for a lot of reasons. But those are games you got to win. You got to go into, you know, if of those three games in particular, you got to win two of them. Like, that's just how it's going to be. And if you drop the first one in Calgary, okay, fine. You got to win in Edmonton the next night. And I think generally they've done a good job of doing that. It's actually funny because I looked ahead to March, and March is an even scarier month than February. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. But it's going to be interesting to see that how they respond after this 10 days off, after the first half they've had, after Matt Barzal being at the All-Star game and being sort of the toast of the town, which we'll talk about a little bit. We'll see where they end up.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, that those games against the Sabres and the Blue Jackets are 4-point games. So, like, that's the last time the Islanders had a 4-point game, you know, this late in the season was, you know, 3 years ago. So it's going to be awesome just to be in the spot and to do it. I think that they're also stability wise are in a better spot than teams like Columbus, obviously, Carolina, who is much further down, like, but in the division, but same way. The Sabres too. Like, these are teams, like, the Sabres have a big decision with Jeff Skinner. The Blue Jackets have a big decision coming with Panarin. Michael Ferland to get traded. So things there's this kind of landscape we're looking at now. The Penguins are want to trade Derek Brassard. There's this things are going to shift around even more. And the Islanders don't have like any kind of cloud like that hanging over. The only thing that we're anticipating is the Islanders to add good players to their team, which they are short of, which is nice. So they're in a great spot. And like I said, like, now that they have all these chips sitting in front of them at the poker table, they just need to do everything they can just to not blow it. And luckily they have a guy at the helm who is very good at not blowing it.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Also good at not blowing it, Matt Barzal. So let's finish talking about him. He was the Islanders' lone representative at the All-Star game this weekend. By the way, thank you to whoever was in the comments that was like, isn't the All-Star game Saturday night? And the skills competition Friday, because I did that whole show last week totally assuming that the All-Star game was on Sunday, as it had been forever. But the All-Star game was actually on Saturday. So thank you, because I would have totally missed it. And I watched it, and I'm glad I did, because Matt Barzal was essentially the toast of the town. The Metro Division beat the Central Division 10-5 in the final. Barzal, along with Sidney Crosby and Chris Letang, basically destroyed everything that was in front of them. Crosby had 5 points. Barzal had 5 points. Letang had a bunch of points. Of course, Crosby won the MVP because, you know, he's Sidney Crosby. When I found out he and Barzal had the same amount of points in that game, I was really pulling for Barzal to, like, go coast to coast and score an unassisted goal or something to give him the extra points so that they would have to give him the MVP trophy, but it didn't happen that way. But, you know, regardless of the MVP trophy, he put on a show for the world. Crosby and Letang couldn't stop talking about how great he was and how he kind of, like, you know, distributed the puck and was all over them and made things easier for them. And he got a lot of love from NBC, which I was totally shocked. I didn't think that, you know, they really cared. Like you said, I mean, with Tavares, it was always about how professional he was. And, oh, yeah, there's Islanders All-Star John Tavares. Well, big deal. Of course he's here. But with Barzal, they, you know, they had him spotlighted on the screen and they had him, you know, showing him on the bench. They showed his reaction after he missed a goal that was kind of an open net goal that he could have scored. And the kid looked kind of ticked off that he missed it, just like it wasn't a real game. And so I came away with it very, very impressed. I was very, very happy. You know, we shouldn't look for validation from outside sources like that. I get it. I think I said something like that last week, but you know what, when you're watching the All-Star game and they're fawning over your boy, feels pretty good, I gotta say.
Yeah, more about the Crosby and Letang than anything, because I was just saying this to Arthur. It's pretty sad, and you, that I already forget if I brought it up, but you didn't really hear people talk about John Tavares in the same way. And this might be, you know, a little bias and sour grapes, but with Tavares, the narrative when people were interviewed on other teams saying, oh, you know, he was really good tonight when they were playing against him, or, you know, at these type of events or preseason stuff, they'd be like, oh, you know, like, he works so hard, he competes so hard, he just, he wants to win. He's strong on the puck, and he's got great hockey IQ. Where Barzal, like, it's they are literally watching him and enjoying watching him play because he's that good at and he's that skilled. He's got more flash than Tavares had. Tavares perhaps had, you know, more strength on the puck and was maybe a little bit harder to play against, like in a tight space. Barzal was literally taking their breath away. Crosby and Letang. And I remember when Crosby was really hitting his stride, and the Penguins had that 24/7. They had the Winter Classic, and they did the 24/7 with the Penguins. I remember Pascal Dupuis talking about Sidney Crosby on like a driving scene to the arena, and he's like, and he was just glowing about him. And that's, and I was like, Sidney Crosby and Chris Letang sound like Pascal Dupuis did talking about Crosby, talking about Matt Barzal, which is awesome. And another thing too, and this is, you know, I'm definitely reading too much into it, but it's cool to get taken away and down this way. It's like Matt Barzal lives for these moments. Yes. He showed it against the Leafs. He showed it in the All-Star game. And that's like another reason why I'm confident that this team can get this job done, this job being staying in the race and winning a playoff berth, is because he isn't going to shy away from these high stakes games. The Capitals game, when they went back to Washington, he played fantastic. Like I said, that Leafs game, the All-Star game, these big moments, it's not that he even shies away from it. He doesn't grip his stick too hard.
Right.
He doesn't try to do too much, it seems like. He just is so good that he doesn't need to do that, and he will still have an effect on the game.
He's very comfortable. I mean, you could see it in the All-Star game. He was very comfortable. He talked about how, you know, playing with his idols, and, oh my God, I'm on a line with Sidney Crosby, and Patrick Kane is there. But, like, he looks very comfortable around these guys. And he looks very comfortable having them watch him do his thing, which, again, is, you know, kind of rising to that moment and showing off, basically. I mean, what's the All-Star game if not a show-off, a showy showcase for show-offs? That's what the All-Star game is. So, it was really cool.
They should change the name to that.
The NHL, showy showcase for show-offs. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because they wouldn't change – obviously, that's ridiculous. They wouldn't change the name for the All-Star game because, mainly, NBC is the No Fun Allowed channel. And if I have one complaint about the All-Star game, it's that – this is a fun, frivolous, ridiculous event that's really for sponsors, as people have said many times, and it brings the best players together before they all head off to Bermuda or Aruba or wherever. And like, but the problem is the programming of the guys doing the commentating and the color analysis for NBC doesn't allow them to have fun. Like, Keith Jones isn't a guy you go to for everything. He might tell you cool, funny stories when he's off camera, but on camera, he's as dry as a bone. And then, of course, Pierre is just, the less said about Pierre Maguire, the better. And Kenny Albert's great. Like, I love Kenny Albert's, you know, Kenny Albert when he does, you know, the play-by-play, but you don't go to him for, like, fun, enjoyable frivolity and, hey, this is great. I don't know where Doc was, but at least, like, Doc laughs during games sometimes, because when something crazy happens, and I just it was kind of missing that element of like, hey kids, this is kind of fun, this is cool, isn't this great. I don't know, that part really bugged me. But when they were talking about Barzal, it bugged me a lot less. I know, yeah. That's a Homer thing to say, but it's true.
No, you can see just even like the way they handle talking about games on their pregame show too. It's just like they're completely missing the mark on almost every, like on a nightly, it's really hard to miss the mark the way they do on a nightly basis. The only reason I was watching a little bit of it, I had a little bit of money down on Barzal win MVP. So when I saw that he was on the, like the vote ballot, I was excited.
Yeah.
I got a little cheeky and took a piece of, Jack Eichel and, Eric Karlsson. I was watching, I don't really care for it, but for those things as much as maybe I used to, or I should. And, but just having Barzal doing these things, like, made me more invested by the second. And I didn't realize that Kenny Albert was calling the game. When you said that, I just thought Doc did until the second, because I literally was just so focused on Barzal, getting him out of there safely.
Yeah.
He it was fine. There was that scary moment where Seth Jones got tripped, and I was like,
yeah,
I can't believe Seth Jones is in an Islander, because that's how I expect every Islander All-Star player to do.
There was a save that Henrik Lundqvist made that it was just really awkward. I mean, I don't watch a lot of Rangers games. I don't know if this is the way he plays now at 35 or however old he is. But he made a save that was really awkward. And for a moment there, I felt really bad for Rangers fans. Like, oh, my God. Like, that was really – if he could come up lame there, man, I would – I don't know what – I mean, obviously, we have been there because of the whole Rick DiPietro thing, which didn't even happen in the game. It happened in the skills competition. But I felt like a really weird sense of, oh, thank God that Robin Lehner isn't here, because I would – every save would drive me completely bananas. And
yeah, that Rick DiPietro injury, I think – was so seismic, and it's to everybody else.
I remember
around
it, like
the
it was
league.
Yesterday. I think we've talked about it a few times.
Yeah, but like that, everyone else around the league, it was like kind of like a funny footnote in a very Shakespearean career. Mm. But to Islander fans, that really plays into this. That moment played into the psyche of that era, and just how everything kind of unraveled. That was really, and you just heard me talking about, you know, making sure Matt Barzal gets out of that game okay. And it's really all goes back to that.
Yeah.
So,
and that goes for any international. I mean, again, with Tavares too, when he got hurt at Sochi, it was like, hurt. Oh my God, yep. It's the whole thing all over again. Any international tournament, all-star exhibition.
Anything? Just, and even like, it's not the same wavelength, but when Oposo and Mark Streit got hurt in preseason and missed the entire season.
Yeah. Streit was out for the whole season, Oposo half. And they had a good team that year. That was the Wisniewski year. They were looking okay that year. And then
they came out of the gates all right. And I remember where I was when I read that that Streit, I guess, was out, and I just like threw my old phone, like slammed it down on a bathroom sink. I was so upset.
It's too late in the episode to get into all that again. we've covered a lot of ground, and again, the Islanders have a lot of ground to cover this month. But hopefully they can get right back to where they were before the break.
It's gonna be awesome. Yeah, I can't wait. I'm looking forward to this season. I was saying to my friend Cody earlier today, like he lives in Texas now, and he texted me he was checking in, big Islander fan, and I was like, this season just kind of changed everything. And it, like, because nobody, you know, you weren't expecting it in a good way. Mm. It changed. I think everybody's winter got a little bit better. Everything for Islander fans. And I couldn't really think of another way to put it besides like, the season has just kind of changed everything for the better.
Mm. Yeah, no, for sure. It's been, I don't know how many times we could possibly say it, but if you were asked to sign on a dotted line or if you were, you know, told this is the way it's going to be at this point in the season, we would all have signed up for this. So this has been incredible.
It's crazy. There's a couple of boxing matches coming up in April, and I was like thinking about, and I'm like, wait, I can't make plans. That could be a playoff. That could be a playoff night,
right? Well, you could watch them on DAZN. Oh my God, that's easily the worst part of this whole season has been that commercial 8,000 times every game.
It's pretty terrible.
It is. Anything else? Do we forget anything else? I think we covered everything.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
I feel good about this episode.
Yes, so do I. Well, and any episode we can get Art on is a good episode. So some real quick plugs, March 16th, again, Dan and Noel at the Offside Tavern. Nick Hershon is going to be there, author of We Want Fish Sticks. You go there, you can watch the game, and then they're going to have a live Isles Buzz after that. So you should absolutely go. I'm sure it's going to be awesome. Check it out. March 16th, Offside Tavern. That's a Saturday. You should definitely go. SneakyAthletic.com. Put anxiety in the discount code box. You save yourself 10%. Again, a lot of games in the Coliseum coming up. You want the Fort Never Lose stuff. You want the GOAT Matt Barzal stuff to show off, especially on the 28th, to see who the real GOAT is. You want that stuff. You can get it. If you order it now, I'm sure you'll get it all by then. SneakyAthletic.com, 10% off. If you type in anxiety in the discount code box, you should absolutely do that. NHLnames.com was designed by our friend Spiz and NDRE. You should check it out. I meant to mention this before we came on. I decided to christen an NHLnames.com NHL Name of the Week. And this week's NHLnames.com NHL Name of the Week is
Sheldon Rempel, looking for his first touch.
Sheldon Rempel of the LA Kings. Sheldon Rempel. I thought it was Rempel. Right. It is Rempel. I'm sure his friends all call him Rumpelstiltskin. But
I got very you just that was great because like I said, I didn't know about that. I just perked up. I like that.
Thank you. I put a whole 45 seconds of thought into that. But yeah, Sheldon Rempel is this week's NHLNames.com NHL Name of the Week. So go to NHLNames.com, check it out. It's a fun site to hang out at. Tell everybody your Twitter handle right now.
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
The Big Lebowski with two E's. You should absolutely follow Mike there because he's got all kinds of cool stuff for you. And he's just, I don't know, he's a fun follow on Twitter. There you go. I said it. Okay, no problem. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us. Buckle up because it's going to be quite a month for the Islanders. Thanks again to Arthur Staple for coming on with us. And we will talk to you again next week. Take it easy. Bye-bye.